ancient prophecies, folks, that make sense out of the world that we're living in. That's what I'm trying to share with you today as we look at world affairs and world events. It's still not working, so you'll just have to plug it up when I raise my hand. Now, I didn't invent this title, folks, Triangle of Death. It's a little startling, I realise. But what it's trying to tell us is this, that war, followed by pandemics or pestilence and famine, is something that can't be avoided. These things, these three events, are indissolubly linked together. They follow one another. And what we're seeing in the world at the moment is exactly that. I want to just talk about the war in Ukraine for just a moment. As you can see, that's on the map. We have Ukraine here in the centre. You've got Russia to the east and you've got Belarus to the north. And it's right, there's the Crimean Peninsula. And what is happening there, of course, is absolutely upsetting the whole world. And I want us to really appreciate the fact that it isn't just localised matters that are occurring here. This is Bakhmut in Ukraine. The battles are still raging there, as we all know, if we're watching our news. And it's absolutely shocking. And as you can see, this is just a wasteland of ruined buildings. And that is, unfortunately, the way it's happening. Moving on, I want us to note this. The war in Ukraine is causing trouble for the whole world, not just for Ukraine and Europe, but the entire world. And this is why that's happening. For example, Africa. Now, Africa's in drought at the moment in the Horn of Africa, this portion of Africa here. Ethiopia, Sudan, Somalia, they're in their worst drought in 40 years, folks. Now, think about that. And what is worrying is that most of their grain comes from the Ukraine. Now, as you know, a little bit of grain is getting out of Ukraine, but it's going where the prices are the best, and it's not Africa. We're talking about a large number of people here. The Ethiopia has 120 million people. I was amazed to find that out. Sudan has something like 45 million. So we're talking about a large number of people. How do you feed people like that, that many people, when there's a drought? And that is what we're dealing with here. And the Ukraine problem is causing a tremendous shortage of grain in these areas. You know, it's an amazing thing. But while the Horn of Africa is in drought, South Africa has had massive floods. And look at that. That's South Africa at the moment. Africa is a suffering continent. And these people need our prayers, folks. They really do. Now, this is the reason. I want to get back to the fallout from the war in Ukraine for a moment. This picture is showing you a spreading nitrogen-based fertiliser. Mostly nitrogen-based fertilisers come in the form of NPK, mixture of nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. And most of the food that you and I eat is grown in nitrogen-based fertilisers. Because unless you buy from that little organically grown section in your supermarket, all your fruit and veggies, folks, are grown in nitrogen-based fertilisers. They're easily spread, as this slide points out and shows. But what is very important for us to get is that nitrogen-based fertilisers are made with large quantities of natural gas. Now, moving on here, I want you to look at this slide that we've got up at the moment. See those dotted lines here? Here's Russia. These are the Nord Stream pipelines that bring natural gas down to Germany and thence to Europe. The white dots are the Nord Stream 1, and the blue dots are the Nord Stream 2 pipelines. Now, there are two pipelines on each of those, making a total of four. And what has happened is, and you'll have noticed this if you've read or watched your news, these pipelines have all been blown up. Well, three of the four of them anyway, and the other one has been shut down. What does this mean? This means that Europe is no longer exporting nitrogen-based fertilisers. Why is that so serious? Now, this, by the way, is a nitrogen-based fertiliser factory in Germany. And it has, like all of them, and there are a number of these in Germany, it has reduced its output by down to 30%. Now, that means that Europe is no longer exporting any nitrogen-based fertilisers. Is that serious? Yes, it's very serious. And to illustrate this point, note this. I know this is a little bit funny, but nothing happens in a vacuum. Isn't that true? There's a reason for everything that happens. And sometimes the reason is that people and nations make stupid decisions. Well, I want you to notice this, moving on. This is Sri Lanka. Don't know if anybody here has been to Sri Lanka. It used to be called Ceylon when I was a boy. Sri Lanka has a population of about 22 million people. The land mass is slightly smaller than Tasmania. So you can see they're packed in. Around the early part of 2021, that's 2 years ago, the government of Sri Lanka was in serious economic trouble. So what they did was they banned the import of nitrogen-based fertilisers. And they told all their farmers, find organic fertilisers. Well, of course, there wasn't enough to go around. And what followed was a massive crop failure in Sri Lanka. So they've gone from a thriving, self-sustaining country down to the place where 70% of the people are not able to eat sufficient food. They've had to reduce their food sizes. Now, if you had children, folks, and you know how well they like to eat, and you have to tell them, I'm sorry, we've got to reduce the size on your plate, and that's it. That's what's happening in Sri Lanka. All because they can't get the nitrogen-based fertilisers. Now, I noticed on the news over the last week that the World Bank has loaned them $2 billion. That should help them enormously. And I hope one of the first things that they do is they re-establish nitrogen-based fertilisers. I hasten to add here, people, that I am an organic gardener. I'm very committed to doing that because I think that's the way to go. But I'm very conscious that if it wasn't for the fact that we had nitrogen-based fertilisers, we would be going without food in this country. And around the world, this is causing serious trouble. Incidentally, this is Australia. Can you actually see the map? Yes, you can. It's a bit faded there. In October of 2022, how long ago is that? About 6 months ago. If you were listening to your news broadcast, there we come to the news again. If you were listening, you will notice that our government went into panic stations. Do you know why? I'll tell you why. Because the supply of natural gas, because as you know, you can get more money for it shipping it overseas, and there's been a dearth in supply of our own natural gas in Australia. Why is that important? Not only because we also make nitrogen-based fertilisers, but there's another reason, and it's a very interesting one. The modern trucks, now I don't know if we have any truck drivers here, but the modern trucks are programmed so that they have urea pellets made out of nitrogen-based fertiliser. They have, like nitrogen-based fertilisers, urea pellets are put into the exhaust of the modern trucks. That reduces the toxic output of fumes in the exhaust pipe. So you're going to breathe fresher air and less greenhouse gases go out there. This is the theory. If there are not those urea pellets in the exhaust system, folks, the engine is programmed to cut down to 25% power. That means your big trucks will be hailing down the highway at 25 kilometres per hour. And they will eventually cut out completely. This looked like it was going to happen back in October last year. You imagine if that happened and the trucks could no longer operate. Folks, within a matter of weeks, our shelves on our supermarkets would start to empty out. And this country would be in serious trouble, and if it continued, would be in famine. And our government went into panic, our federal government, and they made it happen that the natural gas was supplied in sufficient quantity to make the urea. So you realise how dependent we are on natural gas and a consistent supply of it in the world that we live in. Now, this is Wonji Power Station. You'll mostly be aware here, I'm sure, this is a coal-fired power station. It's been shut down for quite a few years now, and it's going back to the dust that it came from in a big way, and it's not far from here. The reason why I wanted to talk about that is because of this. This is symbolic of the fact that power stations are being shut down around the world on the basis that they're wanting to reduce greenhouse gases. And while I'm a great believer in fresh air, this is being done around the world before alternative supplies of electricity are in place. And I can see this is going to cause a great deal of trouble in the world. What is Europe doing about this? Now, Europe has committed to reducing by 30% greenhouse gases and 30% the use of fossil fuels. Now, that sounds good. So by the year 2030, Europe has committed to reducing their dependence on fossil fuels by 30%. They're starting to work on that big time. Well, what are they going to do? Well, I'll tell you what they are actually doing, and it's mind-boggling, folks. They are, across Europe, particularly in Germany and Poland, clear-felling the forests. Centuries-old trees are being made into wood chips. Why are they doing this? Because they are using it to fire their power stations. And you're saying, well, wait a minute. How does that work? It's a contradiction, I know. But wood chips, folks, and trees are renewable energy. They qualify. So it's all legal. And so they're cutting down the trees to fuel their power stations and, of course, the home fires, keep the home fires burning, on the basis that these are renewable energy sources as replacing the use of fossil fuels. And for myself, I'm finding this mind-boggling, as I said to you, because of the contradictions that this means. As you know, there are large companies around the world buying up carbon credits on the basis that they are going to sustain trees and forests because they absorb the CO2 in the atmosphere. So the contradictions here are just incredible to me, absolutely incredible. This is in the United States. What are they doing here? They're loading ships with millions of tons of wood chips, and it's going across to Europe to help with the same thing that I've just been describing. And to wean them off coal, they're supplying England, they're supplying the Netherlands and other countries in Europe with all of these wood chips in massive quantities going across the Atlantic, all on the basis that these are renewable energy and so it's allowable. And I'm thinking, I just don't get it. I just don't, because of the contradictions that we have here. And I've already mentioned those. Now, I did mention the Netherlands a moment ago. What's happening in the Netherlands? Now, the Netherlands is a remarkable country. You can drive across the Netherlands in 3 hours. And you'll be aware that a lot of the Netherlands have been reclaimed from the sea, and you can see why, can't you? Look at all these massive sea inlets here. And they have got the most efficient farms in the world. Did you know that the Netherlands is the second largest food exporter in the world after the United States of America? And I thought, that is amazing. It's only a small country, but they're such efficient farms. And despite the fact that that is so small, they are doing these remarkable things. Now, this is some of the farmland in the Netherlands. There's a saying that goes like this: evil often signals its intentions in advance. And you will find that. People who do evil things, governments that do, they will let you know in advance often what they're about to do. And if you're alert, it can be very helpful. Well, the government in the Netherlands is planning to close 3,000 farms. They're going to force the closure of 3,000 farms. Now think about what that means. This kind of coercion has not been seen in Europe and possibly the world since Stalin forced the closure of the farms in the Soviet Union in the 1930s. And what is really interesting is this, that in the Ukraine, over 5 million people starved to death in 1932 and 1933 because they forced to close their farms. Is it any wonder that the Ukraine is fighting so desperately to keep their independence? You can understand why with that kind of a background. Now, what is concerning, apart from the obvious that they're closing these farms down, is that these farmers in the Netherlands are probably the most efficient farmers in the world. They're really good, their output is high, and so their pollution is low as well because of this. So it's just incredible to me that this is what they're going to do. So they've been complaining. They've also been forced, by the way, to reduce their use of nitrogen-based fertilisers, which is also putting them under pressure. 40,000 Dutch farmers went out on strike and complaining and protesting about this recently. Some of you may have seen that on the news. And they're protesting the closures of the farms and the nitrogen fertiliser reductions. The German farmers across the border have supported them. They can see the writing on the wall themselves. And it's interesting, they've just formed a political party of their own, the Farmers' Political Party. They call it the BBB. I'm not quite sure what it stands for. I guess it's in Dutch. This is interesting. They've just held elections in Holland. Did you know that, in the Netherlands? And this particular party, the Farmers' Party, actually were very successful and they got 15 seats in the local Senate, in the National Senate, in the Netherlands. But unfortunately, it's not enough to stop this from going ahead. And the government will still have a majority and will be able to close those farms down. And I'm thinking, have these people lost their minds to start doing things like that? I just do not get it. The absurdities continue. The New Zealand government is planning a tax on every sheep and every cow and every pig, which may not worry us. When was the last time a new tax solved a major problem? I can't remember a time in my lifetime. It's just the way it is. And I'm just thinking, this is incredible. This is the problem. You know, there are 1 billion cows in the world. You thought I was going to say New Zealand. 1 billion cows in the world. That's a lot of cows. And they produce a lot of urine and manure and burps. And there are people in the world, personal interest groups, who are very concerned about this. So we've actually not just got a war in the Ukraine, folks. You've got a war on carbon. You've got a war on urea, you've got a war on nitrogen, and now we have a war on methane emissions from agriculture. If you don't think that's serious, I want you to notice this. 150 world governments have committed to reducing methane gases from agriculture. And you're looking at the main culprit right there on the screen. And I'm thinking, where is this going? What is going to be the end result of this? Now, Bill Gates, he's supporting this move. It's interesting, he's established an Australian company that makes a supplement out of seaweed, Australian seaweed, that they feed to the cows and it reduces these toxic gases, which is rather interesting. Moving on. Just as an interest factor, Bill Gates is the largest private landowner in the whole of America. Did you know that? And those, the green, if you can just pick it out, are the states in which he owns all those holdings. And just a matter of interest. Moving on, I was listening to the radio as I was driving a while back, And as I was driving along, there was an Australian judge being interviewed. And he started talking about a law that nobody's taking any notice of. And I picked up my eyes and I thought, well, what's this law that nobody's taking any notice of? This is it. He said, the law of common sense. And I thought, this is really interesting. It's true. Policy, or if you like, policy has taken the place of common sense a lot of the time. And common sense has gone out the window. And especially when we're dealing with this. Nearly 1 billion people are food unsatisfied at the moment. And that's a euphemism, they go to bed hungry. 1 billion people, that's an eighth of the world's population. I believe that we are facing a real prospect of famine on a large scale. I've given you some of the reasons why I think that. There are other people who are saying it as well. Usually it takes about 2 years for a famine to come on, and it generally lasts for about 2 years. But when it's on a worldwide basis and such a large extent, it can last a lot longer than that. There are a lot of people starting to grow their own gardens, folks, and I really recommend you should do that, apart from the fact that it's good for you to grow your own food, especially if you grow it organically, as I do. But there's a prospect of famine. And famine drives migration, and there's lots of migration going on at the moment. This is a photograph of the southern border of the United States. If you're wondering what all the fuss about over in the States about immigration, this is it. That line of people goes out of sight. When I saw this, I thought, is that really, really true? Last year, 3 million people came over this border into the United States last year. Now, if you think that housing is having a hard trouble here keeping up with the demand, imagine if you had millions of people coming into the country. As it is, we've got a lot of people coming into the country this year, our own country, and we've already got a shortage of housing. What does that mean? I don't know. Time will tell. I talked about the deadly triangle when we first started. I'm expanding that to the deadly rectangle. These follow one another. War is followed by famine, is followed by migration, is followed by pestilence. The reason that pestilence follows that, if we can move to the next slide, is because, folks, when people migrate, they take their diseases with them and they spread them around. And this can cause a lot of trouble in their host countries, as you'll appreciate. And, you know, it's an interesting thing that typhus and cholera often follow people who are migrating because these people have been in famine very often, lack of food, their defences are down. In fact, typhus is known as famine fever. So where you have famine, you'll have disease. In fact, in a famine, more people die from disease than they do from lack of food, although it's the lack of food that brings it on. Now, we've just had 2 years of the most remarkable experience that you've had in your lifetime. Actually, can we just go back one for a moment? I was a little bit eager beaver there. We've had this impact our world in ways we never thought possible. And what is interesting, it's not only happened in the countries that we're familiar with, but even your hermit kingdoms like North Korea and others have been fully involved in trying to deal with this whole COVID crisis thing. We've all been taken by surprise by that, haven't we? Did anybody here anticipate this 2 years ago? I don't know anybody who did. It caught us all by surprise. We have had unprecedented restrictions on our freedoms the last 2 years, things that we hadn't anticipated. We've had freedoms on our body autonomy, freedoms on our education taken away, freedoms on our health care have been restricted, and of course, freedoms on our ability to come here on a Sabbath morning and worship. Now, think about what that means. Folks, these are serious times, and there are many people among us who are thinking, like myself, that this is leading up to something bigger and that that was simply a rehearsal. Time will tell when it comes to that. And I suggest that the way we live our lives, God has given us a health message. We need to all take it very seriously. We're blessed to have it. Okay, moving on. Bill Gates. Oh, you've already got him there. Bill Gates thinks that we're still not prepared for a pandemic, and he says there are more pandemics to come. How does he know? I believe that God has allowed the last couple of years to wake the Seventh-day Adventist Church up. Are we asleep? Well, of course. And I mean, Jesus said we would be, didn't he? The parable of the 10 virgins. Everybody's asleep. Those who are staying close to the Lord and those who've let their relationship drift, all asleep. Nobody's awake. And the call comes, behold, the bridegroom cometh. The call comes from outside of the 10. In other words, something happens in the world that alerts the 10 to the fact that the bridegroom is coming. And the idea is that we might wake up from our slumber. And folks, some of us did wake up over the last 2 years. I believe it was God's wake-up call for us. What's your state, spiritual state at the moment? You don't have to answer that question, of course. That's a personal question. Do you feel as though you have grown in the last 2 years? Have you slipped back and gone to sleep again? Because I can feel us going to sleep again. And so what does that tell you that the future holds? Well, God has got to do something more drastic to wake us up. And so I can't help but think, folks, that we've got big things coming. Now, because our time is flying much more quickly than I expected, we're not going to look these scriptures up. Although perhaps we ought to look up the first one. Yes, I will. I'll look it up and I'll read it out. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 1 to 6. Concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. He's writing this to us this morning, surely. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. When they say peace and safety, and that's how we're feeling at the moment, to a degree. When they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes. Verse 4, you brethren are not in darkness, that this day should overtake you as a thief. Folks, it's not the way it is. So verse 6, therefore let us not sleep as others do, let us watch and be sober. People, take a close look at your walk with the Lord, strengthen what remains. Seek the Lord more. Get onto yourself. Use some discipline. Open this book. Take time to be with God in prayer. Make a list of things and people that you want to pray about. This man is General Wayne Eyre. He's the commander of the Canadian Armed Forces, a very influential man. And he made this statement. I think that history will view this year, 2022, as a turning point in the global order. Now, I'm not quite sure what he means by that, but I do know this, that the whole notion of steady as she goes no longer applies to the world we live in. Folks, we can't put our heads in the sand. Things are happening and happening all around us. And it looks as if we're in a global time bomb. Now, I'm going to cut things short here for your sake, folks. Anybody feel like they're falling asleep? You're welcome to walk to the back of the church and pace up and down. I'll understand what goes on. You remember the story, and I'll try and be quick here. If we can go on. This is Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives. Incidentally, I often do that at church. Go to the back of the church and walk up and down. If you see me doing it, you'll know why. I'm trying to stay awake because I'm enjoying the sermon. I'm just getting older, that's all. Okay, so the disciples talked to Jesus when they got him on their own on the Mount of Olives. And they said, tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? They wanted to know. How can we know when it's close? We need to know. So Jesus began to talk. This is what he said. Nation will rise against nation. Now, you'll notice that the things we've just been talking about in the world now are the things that Jesus is talking about here. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in different places. So Jesus was describing our time. By the way, he's talking about on a worldwide scale. That's not just isolated events here and there, on a worldwide scale. And we're beginning to see that, folks, as we follow what's going on. So Jesus outlined five categories of signs. Signs in the natural world, moving right on. He spoke about famine first of all. 500 million people are desperate for food. Think about what that means. 24,000 people die from hunger every day, still. Now you need to notice, remember you'll all probably have heard the statement by Stalin, you know, one death is a tragedy and a million deaths is only a statistic. Folks, we can't go down that track. Every person who dies in that 24,000, that billion who go to bed hungry, everyone is a person who in their own right deserves life as much as you and I. So we need to keep that in mind as we go through this stuff. We didn't talk about earthquakes yet, but I want to now very briefly. Remember the Christchurch earthquake? That was 10, 12 years ago. That was 6.2 on the Richter scale. 6.2. Now, in global terms, that's not a very big earthquake, actually. Indonesia had a bigger one than that back in 2018. And it was a pretty bad one. Look at that. That was a lot of damage was done. And, of course, we know what happened just 2 months ago. Well, actually, it was only last... No, it's 2 months ago now, on the 1st of April. The Turkey and Syria earthquake. Folks, that was a 7.8. Christchurch was a 6.2. This was a 7.8. I mean, the damage it did is just mind-boggling again. 214,000 buildings were destroyed. They went down like a pack of cards. Look at them. No wonder there were 50,000 people at least killed during that terrible earthquake. So are there earthquakes around the world? Absolutely. Now look, this is a chart. It deals with, as you can see on the screen, the first decade of the 21st century. These are the earthquakes. This is a 9-magnitude earthquake. During that decade, there was just one, 13 of those, 140 and so on. And from those that are between 5 and 6, you might as well say, 16,500. I want you to notice the next chart. The bottom, these are pretty much the same, but the bottom layer has gone up from 16,000 to 81,000 in the second decade. Now, that's incredible, folks. And that is what is happening in the world today. And it's alarming to the world. Jesus predicted tsunamis and cyclones. This is what he said. On earth, distress of nations, sea and waves roaring. And we've seen that happen. I mean, who could ever forget the water going over into the towns and cities when we saw these on our screens some years ago? I want to talk about the ecological crisis. This is something that bothers me. This is the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Now, look closely here. This is made up of mostly plastic, but you can see rope and all kinds of things. And you can see something else. You can see a lot of fish. There's a turtle. Underneath these great garbage patches, and there are five of them in the world at the moment, I'll give you more info in a moment, there's a confetti-like mass of disintegrating plastic underneath these garbage patches, and the fish are eating them. And you can imagine what that's doing to them and the people who eat them. Thank you. Now, this is the Atlantic garbage patch. And there are five of these. And the currents, you see, bring all the debris together into one big or five big patches. Now, somebody said, well, why doesn't someone clean it up? These garbage patches, in some cases, are hundreds of kilometres across. You heard me right. Hundreds of kilometres across. Now, that, to me, that's just staggering, the thought. So these are out there and doing massive damage. So that's a greater concern to me. I'm all in favour of getting rid of plastic bags. Between 1 and 2 million tonnes of plastic go into the oceans every year. And they end up in these great patches. It's just amazing what's going on. This is a light-hearted look at climate change. There are so many special interest groups, it's hard to tell who is telling the truth here. Isn't that right? And it's hard to say. Personally, I like to go to the coal face, excuse the pun, and I talk to the farmers, because the farmers are the ones who work the environment. And the farmers I have talked to have told me this, that the seasons are changing and they're not as reliable as they used to be. That's all they're saying to me, and it's worth noting. Do I believe that we can do anything about it? No, I don't. And I'm sure quite convinced that what's going on in the world today, apart from causing trouble, is going to do nothing. Now, there's a question here. Was there something wrong with the way God made this planet? Well, was there? No, there's nothing wrong with it. But folks, this is what the scripture says. The earth will grow old like a garment. That's Isaiah. Then he talks about, well, I can see him talking about earthquakes here down the bottom. The earth is shaken exceeding, reels to and fro like a drunkard. This earth, dear friends, is getting old and very delicate, and there are reasons for it. Now, this is the Grand Canyon. This is looking at the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is 2.4 kilometres high. As you can see, it's sedimentary rock from the bottom, from this section here, right to the very tip. Right to the very top is sedimentary rock. That means it's been laid down by water, in this case, by water. And in amongst these are layers of marine fossils as well, which I find very interesting. There is evidence all over the world of a massive catastrophe that's been produced by water. And the Grand Canyon is a classic example of that. How do the scientists account for the fact that you have fossils right 2.4 kilometres above sea level? I'll tell you how they do it. You know how the theory goes that tectonic plates have moved in the earth and they have caused pressure, and that's pushed these great massive quantities of soil and rock up into the sky. Personally, I do not buy that. I'll tell you why I don't buy it. That's because scientists also say, when they talk about the Grand Canyon, they cannot understand why, seeing as it's been raised up 2 kilometres into the sky, that there has been no folding of these layers. Now, they expect that if there's great pressures from these tectonic plate movements go ahead, then you'll have folding and tumbling and cracking, and there's no sign of it in the Grand Canyon. And they can't understand that. Not only that, folks. Now, anybody here walked up Mount Everest? No. I was planning to go to the base camp a few years ago. Had problems, couldn't go. Well, the Mount Everest is very interesting because the top section of Mount Everest is sedimentary rock, and it's filled with marine fossils. It is 8.8 kilometres high, and it's filled with marine fossils. If these had been forced up there by tectonic plate movements, there would have been massive folding, and you would not have had marine fossils at the top because they would have been toppled off, and they'd be down the bottom somewhere. So to me, this is obvious proof of the fact that there was a massive flood, massive quantities of water went down here. This, by the way, is Mount Lhotse. Mount Lhotse is just next door, if you like, to Mount Everest. It's 300 metres shorter, so it's 8.5 kilometres high. And right at the top, it's full of sedimentary rock with marine fossils. Now, you have to be at sea level to get marine fossils. It's quite apparent that the sea has washed over these amazing structures. Okay, moving along. So, yes, enormous damage was done to the earth, and it has never recovered from that. This, by the way, is a photograph of Tasmania. Now, I grew up in Tasmania, and I used to walk into the Western Tiers mountain range that you can see over here. That's Cradle Mountain, Barnes Bluff, if anybody's walked there through the overland track, some of you have. And this photograph is actually taken from Mount Roland near Sheffield in the northeast part there. But when we were there as boys, and this is why I'm showing you this, we used to pick up fossils, marine fossils from the top of the mountains, particularly shells, a lot of shells up there. Folks, it's most interesting. Well, look, I've got to move on very quickly. I'm sorry this is going over time here. Only God's intervention can save the planet. We need Jesus to do that. Now, I'm not going to go through this whole thing. Well, you're going to be here and you'll be in famine yourself. So I'm going to go a little bit further. I want you to see this. Going right along. Signs in the political world. Jesus said you'll hear wars and rumours of wars. Now, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. The apocalypse talking about our time, the nations were angry, and they really are at the moment, very angry. That's how many people died in wars in the 20th century, 180 million. These are the places in the world today where there are wars. One quarter of the world's population is in a war zone at the moment, and poor Africa, you know, it's in a terrible state, and a quarter of the world's population is involved in wars. That's 2 billion people in a war zone at the moment. Nuclear conflict is really worrying the world. Moving on. This is the doomsday clock. I'm sure you've heard of the doomsday clock. They've just set it. They set it every year. The doomsday clock for the past 3 years was set at 100 seconds to midnight. It has just been moved for this year to 90 seconds to midnight. These are the people who organised that. And the reason they've done that is because of the threat of nuclear war in the Ukraine. Signs in the social order. I'm going to flick through this very quickly, folks. Jesus said, love of many will grow cold. Moving on. Perilous times will come. Now, the Apostle Paul, if we can move on, gave us a list there. Lovers of themselves, lovers of money, blasphemers, proud, and so on. It's keeping on going. Got to be quick here. Despisers of good, traitors, heavy, and so on. Folks, this is the age of the narcissist. And we are raising a generation of narcissists, which is a great concern to me. These are the main schools problems. Look at our children. That tells you a lot. These are the main problems that school were facing back in the year 1940. Look at the list. Chewing gum, making noise, running in the hall. I can remember getting into trouble for running in the hall at school. These are the main problems in the 2000s. Drug use, alcohol abuse, teen pregnancy, suicide, rape. And right at the bottom, I've put number 8, gender confusion. And I'm sure you'll be as worried as I am about this. This is a terrible struggle to our children. Some would call it sexual abuse of our kids. I would go down that track. It's a great deal of concern to all of us. Okay, signs in the financial world. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. Babylon, nobody buys your merchandise anymore. What's the main problem, folks? Well, this is interest rates in Australia. Around the world, interest rates are going up, and it's a concern to our young families on mortgages. Moving on. Now I'm going to move to the signs in the religious world. We're getting to the end now. We can see from what we've just looked at that Jesus knew what was coming, didn't he? And the prophets, they knew what was coming and they have told us. So we know, and we've been reminded today of the times in which we are living. Do not think that it's business as usual, folks. We are living in auspicious times. There's a general expectation amongst all religions of a coming messianic figure to save the world, to save the planet. You're probably aware of that. But Jesus was quite clear about what he wanted and knew was going to happen. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world. then the end of the age will come. Moving on. People think, because there's a fairly anti-Christian sentiment in the Western world at the moment, people are inclined to think that that's the way it is throughout the world. Folks, it is not. The rest of the world is seeing the gospel story going gangbusters. Africa, Russia, India. India apparently is seeing a tremendous growth. I was talking to a Chinese man towards the end of last year on the train out to Moree. He'd just recently come to Australia from mainland China. He told me that there are 250 million active Christians in China. I had no idea. 250 million. You know, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world. On our doorstep, Papua New Guinea, thousands of people. This is Ela Beach in Port Moresby. The next slide shows you the massive crowd watching. It's mind-boggling. When I first went to New Guinea as a young man and not an Adventist, I lived just up here, just over the road. There's a road goes down there, and I lived there for a time. My first contact with Seventh-day Adventists was when I lived there. And it was rather interesting. Talk about it sometime. Moving on. So those are all the signs. What do they mean? Moving on again. When these things begin to happen, Jesus said, look up and lift up your heads. Do not be downcast. Your redemption draws near. Folks, Jesus said that men's hearts would be failing them for fear. Yes, let the world be fearful, but not you. You and I don't have to be fearful. Our children don't have to be fearful. Kids, don't be fearful, because Jesus was emphatic about it. He said, don't be discouraged. Lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing nigh. We're on the knife edge of eternity. This is fantastic news, isn't it? And the best is yet to come. Look at this. Jesus was clear. When you see all these things, know it is near at the doors. And we know what the it is that he's referring to here. It's his coming back. So this is our hope. And folks, this is what I want you to encourage your children about. Do they have Jesus in their heart? Ellen White is emphatic about the fact that if you have Jesus today, you're ready if Jesus should come today. Is that clear enough for me? I can get that. Remind your kids, come you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom. I don't care if you live under a bridge today and inherit nothing in this life. Because when you get to the glory land, folks, God has got a surprise for you. He knows exactly what you love. And we've seen these before, the lion eats straw like the ox. Because there'll be peace among men, there'll be peace with the animals. No more death, no more crying, no more pain. For the former things are passed away. Down the bottom there, no more sea, because the sea is purely waste space, isn't it? 2/3 of the earth is still covered by the waters of Noah's flood. Eye has not seen nor ear heard. You can't even imagine the things that God has planned for you. You personally. God will wipe away every tear. All of us carry griefs. There'll be none of that. No more death, no sorrow, no crying. Former things have passed away. Set your mind on eternity. Yes, we do have to live here. Yes, we do have to make a living here, provide a home. But folks, don't set your heart on it. Do not. At most, it's only 70 or 80 years worth that you'll have it for anyway. And eternity is coming. And I believe we're going to see it far sooner than we think. We're going to close there with those words, folks. You know what they say, just be there. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the wonderful call to follow you no matter what it takes. And we want to praise you today because Jesus has made it possible for us to look at what's happening in the world and to take heart rather than to lose heart and to realize the coming of Jesus is sooner than we ever believed. I pray that you'll keep us in your grace, that you'll wash us in the blood of Jesus again today and help us, Lord, to be faithful until that day when Jesus comes. And we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.